Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. This is a special Baby Boomers edition. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves and welcome to Listen to Older Voices. This is a two-part program featuring the life and time story of 69-year-old Ruth Rooney. Although born in the baby boomer generation, Ruth didn't follow the path of most baby boomers, and as the program progresses, you'll understand why. She was adopted at a very young age and lived with her adoptive parents for her early years in the Western districts of Victoria. She went to school in a one-room classroom and was often driven to school by a 12-year-old boy with her parents' knowledge. This alone makes for a most fascinating story, but there's more to come. As she grew up, she became very involved with her church, and through her belief that she was called, she volunteered to work in Papua New Guinea on a job and in a lifestyle that she loved. But sadly, as we will later learn, it came to a less than satisfactory end. But let's start at the beginning. Here I am, talking with Ruth. Ruth, first of all, thank you for inviting me into your home. And can I start by asking you, when were you born and whereabouts were you born?
I was born in 1948 and I was in Tasmania. I was born in Launceston Hospital and I was adopted when I was 4.5 months because my natural mother, she was 35 and my father was 17 when I was conceived. So my father then died by 21 and I was adopted out to Hervey and Myrtle Menzel in the Western District. There's a lot of Menzels up there.
Right. Do you have any memories of those early years with them?
Not with my biological family, but
with the Menzels.
Parents,
yeah, with your parents, yeah. What's your earliest memories of living with them?
My dad used to tell me Bible stories all the time. And he told me about, you know, disciples in a boat and boisterous waves and everything. And they were afraid. And Jesus stood up and said, "Peace, be still." So one day I was riding my bike. I was taught to ride by my dad. And he instilled into me, you know, you need to call on God to help me.
Right.
At times. Well, I sat down on the rear wheel of my bike and I said, "Lord Jesus, please, peace, be still." Immediately everything grew calm and I got on my bike and rode home. And Mum was at home, kneeling down by her bed, and I knew I was in there somewhere.
Goodness me. Mm. What was it like growing up in Western Districts? Because that, my image of it is it's very vast, open, and not a lot of people around.
Yeah, up around Hamilton, it's very dry.
Yes.
Not green grass. It's, you know, browny, yellow colour and all that. But Dad grew wheat and some other cereals and stuff, and that Mum made the bread with the seeds, you know, the wheat, and she made cakes and biscuits and pastries and all that, and they only went into Hamilton about once a month when they extremely had to, because it was 30 miles into Hamilton.
Right.
I was out of Cavendish, and I used to ride 5 miles to school and 5 miles home.
Whoa.
Again.
As kids these days complain about walking down the shops.
Yeah. As soon as I could ride that bike, Dad said, "You're going to school on the bike tomorrow."
That must have been a tough ride, though.
It was, because it was a narrow road.
Right.
And we used to come across another car. I'd have to move right over off the gravel, you know, on the loose gravel. It was hard.
Yeah. Ever have any accidents because of the gravel?
No, but I've ridden over a snake. I was watching a fox's tail go through the fields above the field, the grasses, and I was riding with another guy, and I wasn't concentrating on what I was doing on the road, and I went over a snake and it's starting to uncoil. So the other boy got on his bike and rode up to a farmer that was coming along the road on his tractor, and he skidded over it. They said a snake is a good snake when it's dead.
Certainly not when it's on your bike.
Yeah.
It's a good snake, yes. What was school like? Was it a small school?
It was a one-teacher school, so we had six grades in that. At the start, my driver that took me was the next-door neighbour. He was 12 when he drove the car, and because he sort of was that little bit short, he'd sort of bolster up on cushions and he'd have a hat on the dashboard, and whenever the policeman came along, he'd put the hat on so that he looked like his dad, Ira. And, yeah, it looked good.
So, Mum and Dad were happy for this to happen?
Oh, well, that was all
it was the way it
I
was
could
up
do
there.
Then.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
What was the school like for you? Did you enjoy it?
I loved it. I got a really great basic knowledge of spelling, and I learned my tables, and they were never a problem to me, times table. So much so that later on in life I used to do teacher aid, and I used to teach children long division.
Goodness, okay.
So, because I got such a good grounding of all that stuff.
Yes. Did you have many friends at school? Or were all the kids friends?
Oh, at state school at Melville Forest, they used to put me between the bearers or whatever they are, and they used to tease me and they used to kick me and
all
that sort of thing. And, yeah, Dad said we can't do anything because we haven't got much money and the other kids have got their property owners, you know, big property owners, and they've got money and you can't do anything, you can't win. So I had to put up with it.
That must have been an unpleasant experience then.
But as for learning, I did well.
Yeah, obviously.
I had a wonderful teacher. He used to do that beautiful cursive and beautiful printing, and I learned to do all the things they do.
Yes, yes. What about life back on the farm for a young girl? Were there any neighbours around with kids?
No, the nearest farmhouse was about a kilometre or a mile away in those days.
So it was very lonely for you?
Yeah.
How did you fill in your time when you weren't at school?
Oh, the sheep were my friends and climbed trees and...
you were innovative, you made your own fun up, did you?
Yeah. I'd sit down outside on the dirt and make cars and bridges and have dirt, scoop it all out and have a bridge going over and things like that. And whenever my kids said later in life, "Mum, I'm bored," I'd say, "Find something to do and go and do it." So,
yes.
To me, it was easy.
Yes. Being left to your own devices, it really encourages your imagination, doesn't it?
Mm.
And to invent things and just discover.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. You mentioned your dad. What about Mum? What sort of person was your mum?
Oh, she was a beautiful person. Just nurturing and so loving and caring. And, you know, I mean, she prayed for 7 years for another child, and there I was. Auntie Margaret had written over and said, "I've had another child, so can you take her?" Mum says, "This is the answer to my prayers. 7 years I've prayed for another child."
So this was after you came? 7 years after you arrived?
No, 7 years before she heard that I was available.
So you had an older sister, did you?
I had a brother.
A brother?
Yeah, he'll be coming up on Christmas. He comes up each year.
How exciting.
Yeah. So when I see him come in the drive, I go, "Oh, better put the kettle on." Or he sees me coming in on the scooter and he says, "Oh, put the kettle on for Ruth."
Where does he live?
Oakley.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, it's a drive, but it's not like another state or something.
He doesn't drive. And
so how does he get here?
Depends on my two kids who, who don't take me even to the doctor's kilometre down the road at Wirriallock, but they'll take him.
To Oakley and back. Mm.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is. We'll get on to your kids maybe a little bit later on. So you were in the same farm environment right through primary school.
When I came down to Melbourne because Dad had a breakdown, I went to Auburn South State School.
Right.
And that was over off Auburn Road, Hawthorne East.
How old were you then, about? Oh. Just about. I mean, well, you still must have been under 11 because you're at primary school.
I went to grade 5 there.
Oh, okay. So probably about 8 or 9.
Yeah.
Yeah. That must have been a big change for you from the little one-room school.
Was.
Yes.
It was.
Was it a good change or not?
Yeah, it was good. We had a drink of milk every day.
Of course, that's right. If it wasn't left in the sun.
Yeah.
You still had to drink it anyway. Yeah. Yes, that's right. The dreaded cooked milk.
Otherwise, you got left behind. No milk.
Was it an opportunity to make friends there?
Yeah, I did make a few friends, and some of those I went to Swinburne Tech with afterwards.
Oh, right.
Like about 3 of them went to Swinburne.
Right.
So I did commercial course there, typing, shorthand.
Right.
And he can't do shorthand in jobs now. And
it's changed a lot, hasn't it? Sure has.
Yeah.
So you would have been a teenager then at that stage.
Yep.
Going there. So that would have been into the early 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had a church life then.
And this is Listen to Older Voices. Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio. I'm Rob Greaves and I'm talking with Ruth Rooney.
I went to Billy Graham Crusade and I met a lady there who was going to Camberwell Baptist Church.
Right.
And, well, I was starting to go there the next year. But she said to me, oh, I'll look after you if you come there. And she bought me clothes. She bought me a plaid skirt and a beret and, you know,
right,
socks and everything to go with it. And I wore that to Sunday school and church and everything.
So years. Did you go to that school?
I went to that church, yeah.
Yeah. Billy Graham. He was really, really big at that time, wasn't he?
He was,
in the late 50s, early 60s.
Yeah.
Can you recall going there, what it was like? Was it exciting?
Yeah, it was.
What was it about Billy and his message that grabbed you?
I just knew that was for me because of my upbringing at the start. My whole life's been built on prayer and all of that.
And hope and, yes.
Yes. And certainty, knowing, you know, that we've got a future and a hope and everything's all right. You know, got an eternal life after this one and all that.
Right. So, all right, let's go back to you going to Swinburne. What was that experience like? Was that enjoyable or not? Because that was a massively big school, wasn't it, compared to what you've been to?
Yeah. Kids would all come along and talk about what they did on weekends, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to live that kind of life.
Not for you.
No. So I was still very much in the church and all of that, so I didn't want some of the things they were talking about doing. And
as a teenager, how did you feel in the time when you weren't at school? And
I'd go down to the church, Camberwell Baptist, where I was married later on, and I'd go to church and then I'd walk home and have lunch, and then that was some distance from the church. It was about 1.5 miles in Hawthorne East. And then I'd walk back again because Mum would give me the fare to go on the tram. But I'd worked it out. If I don't spend that on the tram, I can go into the shop on the corner in Camberwell, right at the junction there, and I could buy something with that tram fare money.
Yep. I think most of us as kids did that at some stage. Oh, yes. Either that or going and get some, because it was cheap in those days, some fish and chips or something.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Mm. But did the church provide some sort of social activity
for
you?
Oh, they had a big lot of activities for us growing up, probably more so than a lot of churches do now.
Mm.
We'd go to the youth leader's place in the afternoon and we'd have tea there. Then we'd sing around because one played the guitar and the wife played the piano, and she was a brilliant pianist. And she used to play for Sunday school anniversaries and that as well, and they used to erect a platform going up and we'd sit on that, and those things were really high days. And just loved the life.
Just looking at your face then, you had this beautiful smile in both your eyes and your mouth. They were wonderful days to you. Yes. And I understand you've got a pretty good voice too.
Yeah, I sing.
Yes. Yeah, so that was whispered to me that Ruth's got a really good voice. So it goes right back to being a fairly young girl, that voice.
Yeah. I was the only one for generations that could sing.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to be endowed with some gifts, isn't it?
I go to Wurrialik Church now, opposite the primary school, and I sing there, and I've sung up at Warburton SDA Church.
Right.
Yeah.
Does that make you feel good when you sing? Is it, or is it just...
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, a program that presents the stories of everyday Australians through the recollection of their lives. The years move on. The 60s were worldwide, let alone Australia, very tumultuous, but it sounds like you isolated or insulated yourself from that with the church and led a fairly focused, quieter life. Is that right?
Yeah.
Right. The Vietnam War came along. Did you have any feelings about that?
I thought, they go off and they do what they're doing for the country, and then people like Denise Drysdale went over there, and a group of them, and they had a program for those that were involved in the war and that kind of thing, and I thought, pretty good of them to go over there. So then I decided, well, I'd go to Papua New Guinea.
All right.
So I went there. I'd just met my husband, and I didn't know exactly how he felt. So I went off to Papua New Guinea and worked in the print shop, typing in Pidgin English, and also in Wiru language, W-I-R-U.
That's a local language,
is it?
That's
one of the dialects, yeah.
So you had to learn that.
Over there. No, we had all the hieroglyphics changed on the typewriter, an IBM executive, and we just looked where these hieroglyphics were that are above letters that we had to copy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we were typing New Testament and things like that.
Did you feel like it was a bit of a calling or
Yeah, I did.
So you went with the permission or the auspice of the church,
I went with Summer Institute of Linguistics, Wycliffe Bible Translators.
Right.
And I did it free for them, you know, my way of contributing something.
Sure, sure. Yeah. That must have been also a beautiful cultural change going to places like New Guinea.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy that side of life, the culture and the people?
I did. But one of the New Guineans, my pigeon teacher, I was too friendly. I was walking along the road and I'd smile at everyone. And that was a come on.
Taken the wrong way.
Yeah. So they knew where we lived and he'd come to the house after hours. And I thought, do I throw boiling water over him or what do I do? I'd heard all these stories. I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. So I just told him no. And, you know, he was so persistent and they said, Ruth, you've got to go because we've trained him and sorry, you've just got to leave.
Oh, that was a terrible ending for you.
Yeah, I was taken to a guest house that they run and then I was taken down to Lae, shipped out. I had no more contact with any people there, couldn't tell them where I was going or that
goodness
I was leaving
me.
Anything, yeah. Well, so that was sad.
Yeah, very sad. Yeah. So what, you came back to, went back to Australia?
So I came back to Australia and I happened to ring John, my husband, from there and say, John, I'm leaving. Papua New Guinea. I've got to come home. And he said, do you want me to meet you at the airport? I thought, I've never heard this guy speak so much. One time, he was sitting down at the table and he was writing, Dear Ruth, to try and find directions to come and see where things stood with us. But he could only get out, Dear Ruth. He had dyslexia.
Oh, okay. No, well, that's not funny.
He struggled.
That is a struggle.
Yeah. So, yeah, I came home to him and he said I was as quiet can be. I was really cold.
It took the energies out of you, didn't it?
I'd left over there and I loved it and I had to come home. And I didn't know where things stood here with John. I thought I had an inkling, but, yeah.
Were you married at that stage?
No, we got married about a year or two later.
So let's talk a little bit about John. How did you meet John?
I met him at a group for single adults that we went to at Campbell Baptist Church at one of the homes. And we went to the tulip farm, Tesla's at
Mombok.
Mombok there, And we had to line up at Mount Waverley and get in a car. But before that, I had come by train from Gardner Station. The other guy had got in the train before me. I had to watch out for this guy, tall, fair haired, had a dog, because he was a seeing eyed dog, so he was blind, the chap. And I had to walk from Mount Waverley Station up to the house where we were going. And I got in the car with him, and I happened to get in John's car. And just in John's line of fire, rear vision mirror, he could see me. And he's saying, Lord, is she meant for me? And, you know, he's thinking about this all the rest of the day.
He told you this later on,
didn't
he?
Right. By night time, he knew I was meant for him.
Did you know you were meant for him?
Well, it became increasingly, you know.
Strong?
Yeah.
So just took a little time to develop out.
Yeah.
And going away to New Guinea and coming back was traumatic, but it sounds like it also sort of made you think about whether or not you wanted to keep going with John, and that firmed it up. Is that right?
Yeah, because he did come around a bit before I went to Papua New Guinea.
Right.
He just hadn't committed himself, you know, in any way, sort of.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So you packed your bags and did the right thing, went to New Guinea, and unfortunately New Guinea didn't do the right thing by you.
No.
So you came back, and how long did it take for him to ask you the question?
His dad was away in Western Australia. Yeah, it just happened.
Yeah. Can you remember where it happened?
Yeah. He was doing my hair. It was at Mum's house. And he was brushing my hair. I was sitting between his feet and he's brushing my hair. And all of a sudden, you know, I looked around like that and he kissed me. So that was it.
That was it?
Yeah.
You were done. You were sold. You knew. Did Mum like him?
Well, Mum said, no, he's not my choice for you. I don't think anyone ever is.
Well, no, and besides, your mum's not marrying him. You are.
No. Yeah. I said, Mum, I feel he's meant for me. And she said, oh, we'll see. And I thought, oh, no, and the wedding's coming up. And I'm thinking, should I, shouldn't I, should
oh,
I?
Oh, dear.
You know. And I ended up marrying him on the 3rd of May, 1975. And if somebody had told me in 30 years' time that the very day John will have renal failure and he'll be doing dialysis, I would never have believed it.
Of course not. No.
The exact day, 3rd of May 2005, he was doing peritoneal dialysis here in the house.
Right.
So we used to have boxes of bags out in the garage. We'd have to bring them in and set them up with this machine and put them through. And he had bags at night on a machine in the bedroom. Then they took him off that and they put him on hemodialysis. He went to Maroondah Hospital. Opposite the hospital is a dialysis centre there. And he did that for quite some years. 2005, did peritoneal, and must have done that for about 5 years or so. And then 2014, he died because the doctors felt that he should go off dialysis. And I said, but to go off dialysis, isn't that killing him? And they said, no, Ruth, you're doing the right thing. He's got no quality of life and everything, so...
Okay. So, really, the answer was, yes, it will, yeah. But it's the right thing in their mind. Mm.
Join Ruth and I next week for the conclusion to her story, where we'll learn more about her husband, John, and the story of John's passing, and how this part of her story ties into the recent Victorian government's assisted dying legislation. But there's much more to her story, so tune in next week for part two of The Life and Times of Ruth Rooney. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is podcast to you through the Toorak Times and TAG.